Well, picking up where I left off, we were talking about sensuousness, and that's really focusing on the child, feelings, behavior. As I closed last time, making the child, that is, feelings, the thesis, thus negating the father's authority, that which is negative, the father's authority is that which is negative, opens the door to synthesis, or the consensus process. George Hegel, in System of Ethical Life, writes, "The child, contrary to appearance, is the absolute, the rationality of the relationship. He is what is enduring and everlasting, the totality which produces itself once again as such." And I add, once he is liberated from the father's authority to become as he was before the father's first command, rule, fact, or truth came into his life, separating him from himself and the world. That is, now of and for himself and the world only. It is in society, compromise, that the father's authority, no compromise, is negated. Individualism comes from the father's authority. In other words, the father in the home holds each child individually accountable for their behavior. That's the only environment that that takes place. Karl Marx focused on this understanding of individualism and the father's authority. He wrote, "It is not individualism that fulfills the individual. On the contrary, it destroys him. Society is a necessary framework through which freedom and individuality are made realities." In other words, it's not the child humbling, denying, dying to, controlling, disciplining, capitulating himself in order to do the father's will that fulfills the child. According to Marx, it is, on contrary, it destroys him. Society, in other words, the child's desire for approval from others, requiring him to compromise in order to get along, in order to build a relationship, see, is the necessary framework through which freedom and individuality. Now, freedom is freedom from the father's authority and freedom to lust. It's freedom from and freedom to lust after pleasure without having a guilty conscience, which the father's authority engenders. Therefore, it is the group or society that is reality. Norman O. Brown, in his book Life Against Death, The Psychoanalytical Meaning of History, and he covers the understanding of, he was a Marxist, and he showed how Marx and Freud were both on the same page, going the same direction. He writes, "The individual is emancipated in the social group." Freud commented that only through the solidarity of all the participants, that's the consensus process, could the sense of guilt be assuaged. Self-perfection of the human individual is fulfilled in union with the world in pleasure. According to Freud, the ultimate essence of our being is erotic. Eros is fundamentally a desire for union with objects in the world. Eros is the foundation of morality. Just another word for lust. Karl Marx's Feuerbach thesis number 6, he writes, "The real nature of man is a totality of social relations." Now, this is all driven by the heart. The heart is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked. And its message or its communication is, what can I get out of this situation or object or people or person for myself? That is, to satisfy my lusts. And that being the case, it leads to, what will they do to me if they reject me or if I no longer bring them pleasure or I get in their way? And so this is the fear of man. No longer what will Dad say, but what will the group say? What will society say? In lust, fear of God, what the Father says, the one above, is replaced with fear of man, the group's approval, affirmation, the many below. That's the power of group dynamics. There's no more important issue. Now, this is Irvin Yalom. the theory and practice in group psychotherapy. There is no more important issue than the interrelationship of the group members. To question the value or activities of the group would be to thrust himself into a state of dissonance. Few individuals, as Ash has shown, can maintain their objectivity in the face of apparent group unanimity. In other words, it's that consensus process that cooks the person. His willing to compromise, to suspend, to set aside what Dad says, what God says, what the law says, what the Constitution says, for the sake of the moment, for the sake of the crisis. Now, Kurt Lewin and Kenneth Blay, Human Relations and Curriculum Change, he states, the individual accepts the new system of values and beliefs by accepting belongingness to the group. See, it's no longer belonging to the father, which is one, and there's individuality, accountability to, and so therefore there's the discussion. You go to Dad for the solution, not to the kids, but to Dad. But it's in the group that is negated, that the person's new system, it's a paradigm, it's a new system of values and beliefs. Kurt Lewin, in Resolving Social Conflicts, Selected Papers on Group Dynamics, he wrote, the group to which an individual belongs is the ground for his perception, his feelings, and his actions. So it's all sense perception. There's a way that seemeth right unto man, but the end of is the ways of death. Kurt Lewin and Kenneth Benet, his work, Human Relations and Curriculum Change, it is usually easier to change individuals formed into a group than to change any one of them separately. The individual accepts the new system, the new system of values and beliefs by accepting belongingness to the group. Then Kurt Lewin in Wilbert Brookover, his Sociology of Education, he writes, the child takes on the characteristic behavior of the group in which he is placed. He reflects the behavior patterns which are set by the adult leader of the group. That's the key. You bring in a traditional person, and there's accountability. There's preaching, facts, commands and rules, teaching facts and truth, and discussion. They have the final say. You bring in a facilitator of change. A whole different paradigm takes place in that room. Barker, Demo, and Lewin, Kurt Lewin, in Frustration Regression, Experiment with Young Children in Child Behavior and Development, really a classic work. I could spend an hour just how they worked in Iowa on children. Well, they worked on housewives during World War II, but it was all about how to change their paradigm. And they used children as experiments in a lab to observe the way the children behaved in certain situations of how the parents thought, of how the home environment was taking place. So you didn't have to enter the home. You could actually set up a scenario where the children would reflect what was happening in the home. But they write, change in methods of leadership is probably the quickest way to bring about a change in the cultural atmosphere of a group. Let me repeat that. Change in methods of leadership is probably the quickest way to bring about a change in the cultural atmosphere of a group. Any real change of the culture of a group is therefore interwoven with the changes of the power constellation within the group. This won't work without a change in the leadership. See, with God in leadership, there's a discussion if there's any question, and he has a final say. With the facilitator of change, the master facilitator of change, the serpent in the garden, it's a totally different outcome. What the father says is of no value. It's how you feel and what you think that determines right and wrong behavior. Now, George Lukacs, he writes, only when the immediate interests, in other words, you get the group together, you find what they have in common, their desires, their interests, their self-interest, and you build a relationship, one with another, on that interest, only when the immediate interests are integrated into a total view and related to the final goal of the process. And this is why dialogue is important, because the language of I feel and I think, the removal of judgment, threat of condemnation, threat of being cast out, removed from the room. That's discussion. Dad has a final say. Better do what I say or else. Once that's removed, and everybody can share how they feel, what they think. Once that view, what they have in common, is attached to whatever goal they're dealing with, whatever crisis, whatever building, whatever they're doing, they have to be interrelated. Once that happens, he says, only when the immediate interests are integrated into a total view and related to the final goal of the process do they become revolutionary. So we have revolution. That what is that revolution? It is the overthrow of the father's authority, making what the group, what the many below think and will do for and to you, more important than what the father, the one above, thinks and does and will do to you. Lukács continues, the whole system of Marxism stands and falls with the principle that revolution, and what is that? That's the negation of the father's authority in setting policy. In other words, the father no longer is the source for right or wrong behavior. The whole system of Marxism stands and falls with the principle that revolution, and what is that? That revolution is the negation of the father's authority in setting policy. What the father says no longer matters. It's how the children feel. So the whole system of Marxism stands and falls with the principle that revolution is the product of a point of view in which a category of totality is dominant. In other words, once the group, it's called groupthink, once the person and the group become one in mind, based upon what they all have in common, lust for pleasure and fear of loss of pleasure, which is anxiety, that dominates. And so even if they're working on a bridge, whatever social project they're working on, whatever crisis they're working on, the driving force is to remove anyone who comes into the environment insisting they do it this way and not that way. That's the agenda. The whole climate change scenario was worked out by men like Irvin Laszlo in his book, A Strategy for the Future, The Systems Approach to World Order. He writes, bypassing the traditional channels of top-down decision-making, in other words, getting the father's authority out of the room, negating the father's authority while establishing policy or rules or making law. Again, bypassing the traditional channels of top-down decision-making, our objective centers upon the transformation of public opinion. In other words, I feel and I think everybody's getting their polls out, poll surveys, feasibility studies, all that, into an effective instrument of global politics. So you've transcended local. You've transcended the father. Now it's the collective. It's the common-ism. What does everybody have in common? And so that's the global political agenda. Individual values must be measured by their contribution to common interests. What do men have in common? Lust of flesh, lust of the eyes, pride of life, sensuous needs, sense perception, sense experience, and ultimately to world interests. So it's a top-down. In other words, those who are in position above now are able to influence with propaganda, stimulus response. When we realize that's what the whole agenda is. It's all by perception. That's why you have to control the media. You have to control the news. You have to control what people see, the environment around. You have to remove that which reinforces the father's authority and accentuate that which is self-interest based. So individual values must be measured by their contribution to common interests, ultimately to world interests. Transforming public consensus, that's I feel and I think, feeling of oneness, into one favorable to the emergence of a stable and humanistic world order. God's out, man's in. The worship of man replaces the worship of God. Consensus, he writes, is both a personal and a political step. So when you're in a room and they say, let's all just put aside our differences, so let's dialogue, share how we feel, what we think, share our opinion, so we can come to a consensus, is a political system. When the father tells the child, do this, don't do that, and holds the child accountable for his behavior, that's a political system. You're dealing with politics. It is a precondition of all future steps. So this whole idea of let's all get along, let's put aside our differences, is anathema to the father's authority. Its agenda is to remove the father's authority from the thoughts, which directly affects the behavior of everyone who is participating. Now, J.L. Moreno, in Who Shall Survive, and he is a father role-playing, instrumental in a lot of this, Human Relations and Curriculum Change by Kenneth Bonet, references him. He writes, thinking through the process, it is dialectically faulty to start with the negative, in other words, with the father, with anxiety. Again, with the father's authority, with having to do right and not wrong according to established commands, rules, and facts and truth, with being held accountable for being or doing wrong, disobeying, sinning, engendering fear of judgment, condemnation, and being cast out. See, the fear of the father is he's going to come in and take what you are enjoying away. So it's dialectically faulty to start with the father. The problem is to name the dynamic factor provoking anxiety to emerge. Why is the child anxious? Because he's prevented from being himself. See, that's the idea. The father's authority coming between the child and the object the child is lusting after, taking or threatening to take it away. Anxiety, he writes, is a function of spontaneity. There you have stimulus response. So if you have anxiety in the room, it's a result of a father's authority affecting the child. And so the objective is not to focus on the father's authority, but focus upon what it is the child is desiring and to legitimize it. So this anxiety is a function of spontaneity, of the reaction of hate and violence toward the restrainer, towards the person taking the object of lust away. That is in the eyes of the child, and he's thinking that's forever. You know, Dad, I'm going to die if you don't let me go out. Moreno continues, spontaneity can be defined as the adequate response to a new situation or the novel response to an old situation. With the decrease of spontaneity, anxiety increases. In other words, there's a direct correlation. In other words, the less the child can respond, the more anxious he becomes. Of course, this has to be done in an environment of dialogue, where he's not intimidated. And so he can be daydreaming. See, the imagination of the heart was evil continuously. And if that is allowed, if that's your part of, if that's your structure of life, you're not going to hear from God. Now, my imagination is not the problem. It's imagination of the heart. Now, you can sit and imagine how to build a house, but that's a discussion within yourself. Do it this way, don't do it that. If I do it that way, this will happen. There's cause and effect. There's limits and measures. But if you dialogue in your imagination, I feel, I think, oughta, shoulda, mighta, coulda, there's the imagination of the heart. So with the decrease of spontaneity, anxiety increases. With entire loss of spontaneity, anxiety reaches its maximum, the point of panic. See, desperately wicked. This is what's happening in government. These people who've got the credit card, who are now in control of the cash, the taxes, will do whatever it takes to keep control. And they are desperate to remove whoever they fear might get in the way of that credit card. So with entire loss of spontaneity, anxiety reaches its maximum, the point of panic. And then Jürgen Habermas, in Knowledge and Human Interest, Chapter 3, The Idea of Theory of Knowledge as Social Theory. Revolutionary violence reconciles the disunited parties by abolishing the alienation of class antagonism. that set in with the repression of initial morality. What does that mean? Well, the revolutionary violence, in other words, the overthrow of the father and his authority, do you realize it's a violent attack upon the child who believes in the father and his authority in this dialoguing to a consensus group grade environment? It's violent to that child. It's internal. But there's terror. You know, when you do the life raft dilemma, you know, where you have to kill somebody or you have to kill yourself, you have to commit murder. But it's for the group, so it's not murder. See, that's how, if for the sake of the group, I will kill somebody. You have to murder somebody. And you say, well, okay, just pick one. And no, you have to emotionally, internally, physically, because you checked that one. You physically participated in the process. You murdered someone. You have to practice murder for the sake of the group. Can't get around it. You cannot participate. It's a revolutionary, violent act. Well, it's just a test. It's a revolutionary, violent act. And it reconciles the disunited parties. Other words, everybody in that room that took that test has all committed murder for the sake of the group. It's abolished the alienation of class antagonism. Other words, now the group is united in removing anyone who gets in the way of the group. And especially anyone who represses the group's lust for pleasure. Then he continues, the revolution that must occur is the reaction of suppressed life. Stimulus response. Hate walks into the room. In other words, the father walks in the room. And the reaction is what? Remove him. And he continues, which will visit the causality of fate upon the rulers. Ah, there you go. Upon the parents. Upon the property owner. See, my land. How'd they know who to shoot in the Russian Revolution? With this idea, then, it's everybody's land. Whatever you see, you own. It's your land. Rousseau says the earth belongs to no one and the fruit to everyone. See, God says the earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof. But this is counter that. The earth belongs to no one. So if these people come on your property and say, well, get off my property, it's my property, they knew who to shoot. See, your language betrayed your paradigm, revealed your paradigm. Oh, father says, these are my children, not your children. Boom, you're dead. That's how they killed people. Well, they're not physically killing the kids, but they are spiritually. Your child come in and say, cannot, must not, thou shalt not, and hold to it. They're going to be martyred. That's word witness. They're a witness for a position. Refuse to change. So the group will turn and rend your child and will visit the causality of fate upon the rulers. Your child is brought in your authority structure. Got to remove it. Stimulus response. Remove anything from the environment that goes against pleasure. It is, and it continues, it is those who establish self's domination and defend position of power of this sort. In other words, it's the father or the children who obey the father, who set in motion the causality of fate. In other words, they're going to get what they deserve. That is hate and violence towards them. See, Jesus confronted the scribes and Pharisees. He told them, your father is of the devil. And they thought, well, we're of the father of Abraham. No. Physically, yes. Spiritually, no. Jesus was not only physically, but spiritually of Abraham. But they set out to remove him because they rejected the true Abraham. It is those who establish such domination, he writes, and defend positions of power of this sort, in other words, what God says, who set in motion the causality of fate, divide society into social classes, the in-out group. Of course, they have an in-out group too, but they infiltrate the out group to convert them to be in the in-group. And who is that? the social classes: parents over children, owners over workers, God over man, and so forth. Constitution over your elected officials. That suppress justified interests, and those are the lusts, call forth the reaction of suppressed life. That's the stimulus response, the hate. Somebody comes in, tells you you can't do something. You have this hate, get rid of them. And finally experience their just fate in revolution. And that means violence against and overthrow of the right of person, in other words, individuality under God, right of conviction, that's of speech and religion. You know, the moment somebody says, let's be not be negative, they have defiled your right of speech and your right of religion. Right there. And so they've negated your right of property, your right of business. You lose it all. The moment you go into dialogue when it comes to behavior, your property, all the rights God has given you, they're gone. They're gone. Of course, you love yours, and we'll get into that, through covetousness, they with feigned words make merchandise of you. If I find out where you're dissatisfied with what God's telling you you can or cannot do, and I offer to help you in that realm, I own you. That's all that happened in the garden. That's all this is all about. Identify your coveting, your lust, your spontaneity, your sensuousness, where you're dialoguing. Create an environment of dialogue and it'll come forward. And then offer to help you create a real world, a world of your own liking. So Karl Marx and Sigmund Freud had the same ideology, negation of the father's authority. For Marx, it was society. For Freud, it was the individual. Herbert Marcuse, in his book Eros and Civilization, A Psychological Inquiry into Freud, explains Sigmund Freud. He paraphrases him. He writes, this is Freud's psychology. The hatred against patriarchal suppression, a barrier to incest, the desires for the son to return to the mother, culminates in the rebellion of the exiled sons, the collective killing and devouring of the father. We read that again. Well, the father sees this incest. This is Freud's Oedipus complex. Freud was a pervert. No problem with pedophilia. No problem with bestiality. Whatever it does to bring the pleasure is legit. As long as you don't, quote unquote, hurt whatever it is that you're having pleasure with. And so this father sees this immorality. He's the father over the children. He's the husband over the wife. And he's seeing this incestual relationship between the children and the mother, their mother. And he drives them out. You know, it's God driving Adam and Eve out of the garden. My garden, not yours. You live and think and act according to my standards. And so if it's stimulus response, the kids hate that. And so Freud's simply saying the hatred against patriarchal suppression, which is a barrier to incest, the desire for the sons to return to the mother culminates in the rebellion of the exiled sons. These children are cast out. See, that's what Freud said. Well, Marx, we're all sinners, so who gives you the right to fire me because I'm acting immoral on the job? And so you're kicked out. You're judged. You're condemned and you're cast out. That's what God said right off the bat. You do what I say, you're blessed. You disobey me, you're cursed. Cursed is the man who trusts in man, makes the flesh his arm of strength. Blessed is the man whose hope is in the Lord. So these sons then come together into a consensus. That's this consensus group. The consensus group is the children of incest. And their agenda is to collectively, as a group, kill and devour the father. We say devour. Why would you devour the father? I mean, killing him is enough. He's out of the way. No, you bury him. Next generation comes by and they go, who's that? Well, that's dad. What happened to him? We killed him. Why'd you kill him? Because he kept getting us in our way. He kept telling us what we could or couldn't do. But there's the tomb. There's evidence. There's history. And the guilty conscience will be reason stored. So you got to eat him. Now, got to cremate him, throw his ashes all over. So there's nothing left, no sign whatsoever that it's ever an authority. I get your child in my classroom and I have them dialogue to consensus over social issues in a facilitated meeting. They just devoured the father. He doesn't exist. There's no father's authority in dialogue. There's no father's authority in opinion. There's no father's authority in consensus process. It's gone. Then he continues, it is not really a decisive matter whether one has killed one's father or abstained from the deed. Now, if dad's still around, but he no longer functions as a father. See, it's not a matter of whether he's dead or not. It is the function of the conflict and its consequences are the same. In other words, the husband or the father no longer exercises his authority in the home over his wife or his children. Where are the fathers today?